Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
And a good Monday to you. Hello there. How's it going? Heath Klein in for Chuck today. King's away for a day. The stomach not working so well for him today. So hopefully he'll be feeling better tomorrow and we'll have him back in here ready to go. But the college football content, well, that never stops here on the Chuck Oliver Show. And today is a day that a whole bunch of people have been looking forward to. Does not matter what school you are a fan of. You care very much about what happens beginning today. Because today is the start of Alabama's spring football. Now, before this, if you weren't a Crimson Tide fan, whatever. Another day at the office. But now things are different. Now every last detail is going to be pored over with intense ferocity. What's different? What's Kalen DeBoer doing that Nick Saban didn't? What does it mean? Whatever it might be. The guy's looking great out there catching passes. Is the offense going to be better? Defense looks a little soft. They can't make up for the loss of Saban on that defensive side of the ball. Everything is going to be under the microscope. And it's going to lead to so many overreactions. We have no idea. You know better than this. You know at your core. If you listen to this show, you are enough of a college football fan that you know this isn't going to tell you anything. We've all watched enough spring games through the years with dudes that for one day get to be a hero, but by the time you get around to fall, you're like, oh, yeah, that guy. Whatever happened to that guy? Oh, he's at Eastern Illinois now? He transferred in the summer? Oh, man, I thought he was going to be a big deal after he had 8 catches in the spring game. You can't judge anything off of spring meaningful. The closest thing to it was last year when after spring, the Tide went and got Tyler Buckner a quarterback. That did say something that, maybe they didn't love what they'd seen from the quarterbacks. Maybe they weren't sold that they had the answer there. Buckner obviously didn't turn out, even though he knew Tommy Reese's system, to be the answer either. But that action told us a little something. But even there, Jalen Milroe by the end of the year had become a really different player than he was at the start. We're not going to find out what Kalen DeBoer Alabama football is going to be like in the next 15 practices. Not a chance. But man, oh man, is everybody going to be focused on it, waiting to see if maybe we could. Because all these fan bases have been waiting. I go back to our buddy Matt Moscona. And the celebration, the active glee on air of hallelujah, this is it. The moment we've been waiting for has arrived. Nick Saban is finally saying goodbye. Well, now this is the second part of it. Did they nail it? Did they find somebody who could take the good in what Saban did and move it into a modern era? Can you have a better, more effective offense than they had the last couple of years? It would not be hard to imagine that they can. Is Jalen Milroe even the starting quarterback at Alabama? I think it's hard to imagine that he would not get the chance to start at the beginning of the year. But if for whatever reason he struggled, you've got a quarterback who came with Kalen DeBoer, who he recruited, who's been in his system and learning. It's not a given that Jalen Milroe will be the starting quarterback by October for this team. And we're not going to get that in spring football either, any more than we got the real answer to what the quarterback situation was in spring football last year. But all around, and now I'm not just talking the South, everywhere, people are going to be looking for any scrap of information to affirm their view that, hey, this now it has to end. Now they've got to go backwards. But here's the thing. They don't. I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know that anybody who's assuming they have to take a step backward is thinking with their heart more than their head. I've got a friend who is in the media who's a big Bears fan. He could not wait for 2023. Finally, Aaron Rodgers is gone. And after all these years where somehow the Packers had a great quarterback, a Hall of Famer in Brett Favre, and then went directly from him to another Hall of Fame quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, there's no way they're going to do it again. No chance that they're going to have great quarterback play for another decade or so. No way, no how. Was so happy that they were going to get to see them in the first game. Was convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt. No way. By the end of the year, he's like, I don't believe this. I don't understand how it's possible. Because, again, we're not a pro football show here. But if you paid attention, you know, by the end of the year, as Jordan Love got a full season under his belt, he certainly looks like he's going to be a high-end NFL starter for the next few years. It looks like the Packers have successfully made a transition. I'm not saying he'll be Aaron Rodgers. That's probably a little too early to do that. But my friend who was 100% convinced as a Bears fan that finally he was going to get to see the Packers for the first time in like three decades live in his world of having inconsistent at best and sometimes incredibly bad quarterback play, it didn't work out. There's no inherent reason it can't. When you go to Vegas and you play roulette, it could come up red 93 times in a row. No matter how many times that scoreboard says red, and you're like, it has to end. No, it doesn't. It does not. And so maybe Alabama is going to do exactly what Green Bay did. Maybe they're going to go seamlessly from one great coach to another. There's nothing in DeBoer's background that says when it comes to the football side of it, he can't coach and coach effectively and coach at a high level. There's nothing to say that. Now, has he dealt with the SEC? He has not. Can he maintain? That's a different question. There's plenty of talent there. Can you maintain the high level of talent over the next few years flowing in to Alabama? Because the one thing Alabama has had going for it has been that no one else has been able to replicate has been that Saban aura. And I'm not sure anybody else has that right now. Like even a guy like Kirby Smart with two national titles on the resume, I don't know if there are players who say, I would go to Georgia and I'll wait longer because I want to play for Kirby Smart because I see the way he develops guys and send them to the NFL. I don't know if he's there yet. He might be. And if not, he could certainly get there in the next couple of years. But I don't know if he's there yet. But for the last 5 years, Alabama hasn't necessarily had to do some of the same things that other programs have had to do to land players. You haven't necessarily had to have the best NIL setup, for example, because there were some guys who just said, I'm going to go play for that man because I know what will happen if I play for that man. I will probably win a championship. At minimum, I will contend every year, and I will be really well prepared for the NFL, and that's worth it to me. I'll go there to play for that man. Kalen DeBoer cannot do that. No one else could do that. They could hire Dabo. They could have hired Kirby. Nobody could have done for Alabama in the next 5 years what Nick Saban has been doing for them for years now, but especially in this chaotic era, what he has done the last few just by his presence. No one can do that. But the on-field stuff, there's nothing in DeBoer's background that says he can't do things at a very high level. Maybe your defense won't be as good because he's not a defensive background guy. We'll see. But maybe you don't have to be as good defensively, as brilliant at being able to make adaptations in the middle of the game like he did in the SEC title game. Maybe you don't have to be that guy if you can score a ton of points consistently week in, week out. There's a lot of different ways to win. I don't know what Kalen DeBoer Alabama football is going to be. I do know that there's going to be some really bad conclusions that are going to be jumped to over the next month for people who want to believe that what Kalen DeBoer Alabama football is going to be is something bad. We'll have plenty of time to learn about that. We didn't learn about Larry Coker and what Larry Coker football at Miami was going to be that first year when he won a national title or the second year where he played for one. It's going to take some time to see what he makes of this conference, what this conference, once they get some tape on him, what they make of him. And it's obviously going to take some time to see whether he can put together a staff that develops players as effectively as the one that preceded him. You won't get those answers by April. I know we want them. We will not get those answers by April. Don't let anybody, no matter how passionate or intense they are about things, don't let anybody try and fool you that you can. It is the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Coming up on the other side, a guy who's been a little more prominent the last few weeks stakes a claim for someone else on the college football stage. It's an interesting move. I'm not sure it's an effective one. We'll explain coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Show rolling on here on a Monday. Heath in for Chuck today. Glad you could be hanging out with us. So Johnny Manziel has been in the news a little bit. Manziel, of course, recently did an appearance on the Shannon Sharp podcast that got him a lot of attention for what he was willing to share there about the supposed deal that had been offered to at least be considered by Kevin Sumlin, by his dad, $3 million, and he would stay for two more years. That someone apparently laughed off, and other things about what went on during his time there at A&M. And Manziel took some accountability there for some of his behavior issues back in the day. I mean, when you openly talk about the idea that the way you lost a certain amount of weight is a steady diet of blow, then, you know, you're trying to present yourself in a different way, a more responsible way as a person. Maybe this has nothing to do with that. Maybe that is just one thing that happened, and this is another thing that happened, and they're on completely separate highways. But I'm not sure about that. Regardless, Manziel took to social media and sent out the following on Saturday morning. Quote, "After careful thought and consideration, I will be humbly removing myself from the Heisman Trophy ceremony until Reggie Bush gets his trophy back. Doesn't sit right with my morals and values that he can't be on that stage with us every year. Reggie is the Heisman Trophy. Do the right thing, NCAA. The ball's in your court. Much love, JM2. Should Reggie Bush get his Heisman Trophy back? I would argue Reggie Bush should have never lost the Heisman Trophy in the first place. If you want to go back, we're not going to do a full rehash of all the allegations against the Trojan program on this show. It's been a long time. But if you go back and you look at what happened there, you had Reggie Bush's family that was living in a house that they had not paid for. Do we think that that is atypical? Do we think that that is in some way extraordinary for Reggie Bush and no one else on that Heisman Trophy stage? That it is so outlandish and so over the top that somehow it was different? Mind you, O.J. Simpson has not been stripped of his Heisman Trophy. Now, the Goldman family got possession of the Heisman Trophy, but the Heisman Trust has not done anything with regards to O.J. Simpson and saying we no longer acknowledge him as recipient of the trophy. Now, what O.J. Simpson is alleged to have done and has been found legally responsible for, at least liably for, what he did has nothing to do with college football. Whereas Reggie Bush, if his family was getting benefits, if he was getting benefits, yes, that directly ties into college football. I think we can all agree one is still way more egregious than the other. If you had to take a stand on something, I'm not sure that Reggie Bush is the one of the two you take a stand on. So I'm with Manziel that I don't see what the point is of, especially now, acting like, OMG, Reggie Bush, just the worst ever. They probably should give it back. On the other hand, do we really think that the folks at the Heisman ceremony are that concerned one way or the other about where, whether or not Johnny Manziel shows up? Like, do we really think they're going to say, well, we weren't ready to do this, but now that Manziel's taken this stand, we better do something? I'm guessing that of the Heisman former winners that they have show up at the event, if you rated them like most important to least concerned that they're there, I'm guessing that Johnny Manziel's in the bottom 10% of guys that are like, we got to have that guy there because of everything he's done since he won that Heisman. Now, again, that doesn't mean there's not room for growth and room for Johnny Manziel to still find his place in the public square. And I don't know if he's hoping somebody will bring him in as an analyst, for example, for college football, that maybe a Fox or somebody who seems to kind of enjoy having former players with notoriety and isn't necessarily apprehensive about guys that have a checkered past, that maybe they'd take a chance on him. Maybe that's what he's trying for. I don't know. But there's a difference between there may be a path for him to something like that and, oh, we got to make sure that guy's there. Like, people are not going to enjoy the ceremony on the same level if they don't see Johnny Manziel on that stage. I don't think anybody's there. So if Manziel could convince others to go with him on this, if a whole bunch of the Heisman winners said, we're not coming unless Reggie Bush gets the Heisman back, maybe if he could start a movement, okay. But right now, this by itself, I'm not sure that's going to land with a whole lot of oomph, frankly. But it's an interesting choice. Like I say, it feels like Manziel is trying for something here. Whatever that is, good luck to him on finding it. But this doesn't feel completely spontaneous. It feels like there's something going on there. Hey, something that has happened over the last week that probably did not get enough attention, I think we should spend a couple of minutes on here, is last week the word came down that we are going to see some rules changes in college football. Now, they have to be voted on effective April 18th, I believe is the date, to go official, but they almost always are made official. Once the rules proposals are sent to the panel, it almost never changes. So assuming that they rubber stamp it as they are expected to do, the thing that got the attention last week, we talked about it here on the show, in fact, was the creation of a 2-minute warning. With people saying, look, you just made changes with the whole idea being, oh, we got to move the game along. We got to move the game along. It's taking too long. Now you're adding in a timeout seemingly to just try and be a little bit more like the NFL. Now, for what it's worth, that 2-minute warning is going to still be considered one of the existing broadcast timeouts. So they're not going to add in a new timeout for the media. This will just be one that the broadcast crews will know for sure. You will get one at 2 minutes. Part of this apparently stems from concerns about the idea that some of these teams, when you're running out the clock, maybe they don't have room to fit in a last break if you've got a game that's kind of gotten out of hand and so you're kneeling down, you're running out the clock. This way they'll for sure be able to get that last break in if they need to at the 2-minute mark. So that's part of the thought process. We'll see how it goes. I didn't think it was a crisis, but I didn't love it either. And then the helmet speakers, the idea that coaches can now, especially after last year with all the talk about sign stealing, that coaches can communicate directly to their offensive and defensive captain, whoever they want to put that on the field, the quarterback and the defensive guy, they can communicate to them through the helmet speaker. Those got the attention. The other piece of this got almost no attention. And part of that is because it just makes so much sense. But also, I think it's going to be a bigger deal than people realize. And that is that they're going to allow them now to have tablets on the sideline. I was listening to one of the coaches talk this week about how much difference he thinks that's going to make. And he was just saying, look, we have known for years that we could do this and should have this technology, but I think it's going to really help us. I think we're going to be able to show guys things on the sidelines that we can't show them the same way where we're trying to show them a still photo that we've sent down from the press box or we're trying to draw something up on a board. He believes that having access on the tablets and being able to show somebody something on video and say, hey, when they do this, we want you to now do this other thing that we've practiced. And he thinks it's going to make them way more effective at in-game adjustments, at teaching or implementing things that they already have taught, but trying to get guys to understand exactly what they're looking for. And he thinks it's going to make the biggest difference of the three by a lot. Because he's saying, look, you know, we're going to be able to talk to guys, but we got to make sure that we get it in before 15 seconds. We got to make sure that we've got a plan still for if there's an issue with the technology. We can't just depend on the helmet speakers, because if we lose them, then what are we going to do? So it's like, we got to develop a whole plan for that. It's like, it'll be helpful. But he's saying this with the tablets, this is going to be a real difference maker. Now, everybody has access to it, so it's not like it's going to benefit one team more than the other just by virtue of it being there. But inevitably, some staffs are going to be better in game situations at being able to spot something and attack it. They are now, but now you may have a better way to illustrate it. So it probably will wind up helping some squads a little bit more than others. I just thought it was interesting because that one of the three got next to no attention. It's like, yeah, whatever. Tablets on the sideline. We've seen it in the NFL. You see it in high school. That's the whole thing. The only level of football that wasn't doing it was college, and there wasn't any good reason why. And yet, that's been more than enough in previous cases to not have things happen. Just, that's the way we do it, because it's always been the way we do it. I saw somebody talking about things that they didn't like about the idea of the 2-minute warning and the idea it's making it too much like the NFL. And they're saying, what's next? If a guy's down, he's going to be able to get up and run. And I'm thinking, is that really a part of college football we love? Like, does it really excite you if a player makes a great leaping catch and he catches it, but he's on the ground, but no one touches him, that he can't get up and run? Like, I get that that's tradition, but it wouldn't exactly break my heart if that part of tradition went away. I don't want college football to look like the NFL. I don't need college football to look like the NFL. But that doesn't mean that just because some rule like that has always been there, we've got to keep it in place forever and ever because it's what we're used to. There's no negative at all if they decided to change that rule. This is one they should have changed a long time ago. I thought it was interesting hearing that coach in particular kind of go on about how he thought it was going to really help him. We continue here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
And we continue here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath in for Chuck today. And of course, always talking college football, keeping an eye on everything that's going on. We still got a couple of weeks before they get going at FSU, but that might be the program that people are most intrigued about in the entire ACC for a lot of reasons. And so we wanted to go ahead and check in, kind of see what's going on there. So we head to the Duncan Newsmaker line, where we're joined by Kurt Weiler. He covers FSU for the Osceola. That is a Rivals property, and he joins us right now as our Choice reporter here on the Chuck Oliver Show. How you doing, Kurt?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you having me on, Heath.
Definitely appreciate you doing it. Let's start with one of the big off-field developments that has nothing to do with the other stuff that we'll get into. DJU becoming the quarterback at FSU. I think a lot of people know that he did better at Oregon State last year than he had done at the end of Clemson. At the end of Clemson, it was clear, hey, this has got to end. This is not working for either side. But I'm not sure how many people watched him week in, week out at Oregon State. Don't necessarily know how much growth he showed there. What made him the guy for FSU?
Yeah, I think that's it's interesting. It's a mix of things. It's funny. Long before Mike had the opportunity to coach, I think he kind of learned about – he told a story, I think, a few weeks ago at a booster tour stop about he heard a few years ago – so Winston Wright was a quarterback – or a wide receiver, sorry, at Florida State, who was in a pretty serious car accident and missed basically the entire season because of it. I think it was almost a life-threatening accident. And DJ didn't know Winston, but came up, and this was when he had Clemson, came up to Norvell at a kickoff and kind of said, hey, is Winston Wright doing okay? I've been praying for him. Like, I heard about it. And Mike kind of said that, I think, character-wise, because that is something, I mean, for as much as Mike uses the portal, and you might think as quickly as and efficiently as he uses the portal, it's hard to judge character stuff, which is something, but that's something they dramatically care about. And I think that's something that character-wise, I think, spoke volumes to him. They pursued, they hosted both him and Cam Ward on visits. And I think DJ kind of always was locked in on Florida State. And once Cam Ward at the time announced he was going to the NFL, he ended up at Miami, obviously. But before that, stayed going to the NFL, and pretty quickly after that, it progressed. I think they valued the experience. I mean, the thing is, I think they kind of just needed a one-year bridge guy from Jordan Travis to the future. They have a retro freshman and a true freshman behind him. I think we expect those two to battle it out this time next year for the starting job. But I think they kind of didn't want to throw either of them in before they were ready. And so they valued a bridge, and DJ's played, I mean, almost 50 collegiate games. He's started 40. He's played a lot of college football. And like you said, I think he showed some real progress last year. And I think also Clemson, how the year went for them kind of showed, you know, he wasn't the problem. That was somewhat scapegoaty, where, like, things didn't magically get better there once he left. So, yeah, I think they liked a lot of what he did. And I think with the improvements they were able to get out of Jordan Travis, I think they're hopeful they can do the similar with 1 year with DJ.
You just hit on something, which is that Norvell might be the single best guy for hit rate out of the portal. He might be the best coach in the country so far in doing that. I mean, you look at even, for example, a place like Nick Saban at Alabama. You know, there's some high profile guys that went there, like, say, a Harrell from Louisville that really didn't turn into much. It seems like everyone that FSU gets, whether it's a really obvious guy, I mean, I think Joe, who's never watched any football in his life, could watch one quarter of Keon Coleman and say, I think that guy's pretty good. I think you should go get him if you could. But then you look at a guy like Fisk from the MAC. You look at Jared Verse from Albany. All levels, they have been ridiculously good at finding talent. Why has that been something they've done so well?
Yeah, and that's kind of the million-dollar question. Like, Mike is having an incredibly successful career at Florida State. Doesn't seem like he's getting out of coaching anytime soon, but it feels like if he did, he could almost make a lot of money as a transfer portal consultant type because he seems to have figured out the formula. I think one thing you hear, no doubt, I mean, they stay on top of the portal in terms of they regularly you talk to guys and guys will say, oh, yeah, Florida State was the first or the second school to reach out. That they are constantly fast because that's how these things often go. For the guys who don't enter the portal with a place in mind, it feels like they often have a very limited time window just with how that works. And so time is definitely of the essence. But it's also, it is impressive. I'm not going to claim to know the answers, but whatever kind of questionnaire or however it works for Mike Norvell on it, I mean, he seems to very quickly identify the guys who are the right fit and the guys who maybe aren't the right fit. And there are plenty of coveted guys who they talk to and don't end up pursuing that heavily, probably for that reason, because they don't see it as a fit for them. But yeah, I mean, and beyond that, I mean, they close at a really high rate. I mean, they don't get everybody, but they get far more of the guys they really want than they don't get. And I mean, nobody gets everybody with the portal and how it works, but it is an impressive thing. I think I'm not sure I would have thought they would keep using it at the rate they did. I'm not sure they thought. I think they kind of had some roster attrition this offseason where they used it maybe a bit more than they thought they would. But once again, they've used it incredibly effectively, I think. I mean, we'll see for ourselves in a few weeks.
Kurt Weller from the Osceola with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show. All right, so the quarterback is always going to be, anytime there's a new QB, that's always going to be the number one story in spring for every program. Beyond that, what are the things you kind of have your eyes on here in a couple of weeks when they get going?
Yeah, I think, frankly, I mean, we just saw last week at the NFL Combine how much they lost. It kind of reaffirmed, you know, that, A, that team was quite good, and B, just how much they lost. I mean, they had 12 guys at the Combine. They could easily have 9-10 guys drafted. They both have developed some younger pieces. They've started recruiting high school at a higher level. And I think they've also added quite a few – kind of interesting now. They're in a spot – they added a few instant impact guys to the portal. I think they also added some interesting younger guys, like, who have more than 1 year, maybe even more than 2 years that Florida State will get them for. I'm fascinated to see who rises to the occasion. I mean, they're replacing Keon and Johnny at wide receiver. They had both a number of guys they're bringing back, younger and older, and they added a few guys to the portal that I'm fascinated to see. They have plenty of options who rises up there. They added three defensive end transfers, kind of trying to replace the Jared Verse impact. They do bring back Pat Payton, which I think is a big deal, but that defense loses a lot, really, at all three levels. So I'm fascinated who steps up at linebacker with losing Caleb Deloach and Tatum Bethune, who steps up at cornerback with losing Renardo Green and Jerrion Jones. I mean, they have plenty of options. So, like, I'm not worried about this team. It's more fascinated to see who kind of arises from, I think, what could be some really closely contested position battles.
Yeah, I'm curious about the leaders on the team, because I'm sure that DJ will be fine as a quarterback, but you can't lead the same way a Jordan Travis can when he's got the years of experience with them when you're just still getting to know guys. So you could be a leader, but you can't lead the same way. And defensively, I don't know who the leader is. So right now, is there an obvious candidate on both sides of the ball for who that guy is that kind of holds people accountable, brings them together?
If you're talking the defensive side of things, it's interesting. I mean, I think they have some experience. They're bringing back a defensive tackle. Josh Farmer's played a lot of games for them now. He's a redshirt junior. I think, I mean, frankly, a lot of the defensive ends, Sione Lolohea from Oregon State has played a lot of football. I think it's interesting if he can become that guy right away. Marvin Jones Jr. is a former five-star recruit, FSU legacy, who transferred in from Georgia. I think Pat Payton has played a lot of football, and he's a candidate there on the line. In the secondary, I think Shaheen Brown's played a lot. I think there's a guy like Azariah Thomas at cornerback who could step into that role, but I think spring will be pretty telling for that. I'll be interested to hear what Mike has to say, because they had a lot of those guys, really, I think, at each position group last year, and almost as much as on the field going to be interesting to see how that emerges on the spring.
What is this situation like for FSU, for the kids on the field? Like, are they affected by any of this other stuff, the ACC and the legal battles going back and forth there, and any of the talk about the playoff and what it might look like? 2 years doesn't directly affect them, but there's just a lot of stuff going on that a typical football program does not have going on. Does any of that seem to impact anything that they do on the field?
I don't think, especially when you talk to lawsuit stuff, I don't think they're paying too much attention to that. I think they're more, tell me who I'm playing and when, and we'll get ready for them. I mean, the playoff stuff, they probably are paying maybe a little more attention to, especially with how things ended for them last year. But, I mean, at the same time, I think they're probably, however things resolve 2 years down the line, like you said, I would have to imagine they're excited that this year, the upcoming year, that, like, if they did again what they just did, they would get in. There wouldn't be a way for this Florida State to get snubbed like they were going forward in the 12-team era. So, if anything, I would think they're paying attention to that. I mean, unfortunately, I think with the fan base, the combine last week kind of drug up a lot of those feelings again. I imagine it might happen in the NFL draft in April as well, just with how many guys are going to get taken. But I think the team, the lawsuit in particular, I don't think the team pays that close of attention to it. It doesn't affect their day-to-day.
The bowl showing, obviously, was so bizarre, so atypical of how it all came together and what it looked like. Is that a motivator? Is that just a, yeah, we all know what this was, who cares? Like, does that do anything for them to drive them in 24 at all?
That's a good question. I have to imagine having that happen to you is a motivator. But honestly, I think more than that game itself is a motivator, I think the snub is the motivator. You know, I mean, I think that game obviously was the biggest example. And I mean, you want to find out how unmotivated a team can be to play in. I mean, a New Year's Six Bowl is take a team that went undefeated and leave them out of the playoff over two teams that both lost games. You know, I mean, I think the motivator is more how the regular season ended. I mean, Keon Coleman just last week at the Combine was asked kind of for all his individual compliments. You got to ask him what he's most proud of. And he said 13-0. It almost feels like the team is going to view that as a 13-0 season. And the other loss is almost like a different thing, because that version of that team was so far different. I mean, between all the guys who opted out, there were even a few guys there who didn't play, like starters who were there but didn't play because they'd kind of already had the off-season surgeries that they would have delayed had they been in the playoff. You know, they kind of were like, well, if that's what you're telling us of our season, I'm not motivated to play in this game. This game doesn't mean anything. So it's interesting, but I think they're plenty motivated just from how the season ended, maybe whether they are from the bowl game or not.
Last couple of minutes here with Kurt Weiler here on the Chuck Oliver Show, looking at FSU. So, Kurt, for me, as somebody who's not affiliated with FSU, isn't deep into the roots of whatever bitterness is building up with the ACC and whatnot, just looking at what we're being told the playoff formula is, FSU, as long as they maintain anything close to the standard that they've now kind of built to, would be pretty obvious to be one of the two best teams of the ACC almost every year. Why is it better for them? Is it just the revenue is such a big deal that that's the only thing that matters? Why is it a better deal for them to be somewhere else, wherever somewhere else is, trying to fight through a lot more teams than just have what sure looks like an expressway into the playoff? Like, what, as an outsider, what am I missing here?
Well, when you're talking just about the playoff of it all, yes, the ACC will pretty much in the current landscape always have one guaranteed spot. But I cannot imagine many years where, I mean, the problem with the system with where, I mean, five conferences get one auto bid each. But I have to imagine that very rarely, if ever, will two ACC teams get in. So I think the thing is, A, when you're looking at it purely from the playoff standpoint, it's, yes, Florida State has an easier path, but it also has less room for error, because I have to imagine only one ACC team gets in pretty much every year. And if you're number one, great. If you're number two, even if you go 10-2 and then lose the ACC championship game and finish 10-3, I doubt you're in over even like a 9-3 SEC team or a 9-3 Big Ten team. I think that's just the reality. The other side of it is it's really about the money. I mean, Florida State's at a deficit right now in the TV contract that they're dealing with the ACC, relative to what the SEC and Big Ten are already making. And the SEC and Big Ten get to go to the market again and get new, better contracts again before the ACC, which it deals through, I think, 2036. It's a crazy deal. That it's wild that the ACC signed. And, I mean, that money affects football, certainly. I mean, when you're talking about a difference of tens of millions a year, that affects football and how you're able to keep up. It also affects all your other sports. I mean, the beauty of that television deal for those SEC and Big Ten schools is it's going to help all your non-res sports and their facilities and your ability to compete there too. And that's something that Florida State values. Florida State values being able to compete in all sports. I mean, they win a lot of soccer national titles. Their softball team is regularly among the best in the country. Baseball, basketball, plenty of other sports as well. So it's about football when it comes to money, but it's also about everyone else. And the reality is, see, everyone else in particular will really struggle to stay competitive as long as Florida State stays in the ACC. But football probably will too. And they also, I think, will feel totally unrespected relative to those two conferences.
So if they get what they want at the end of the rainbow, what is that? Is that Big Ten? Is that Big 12? Is that SEC? What is the end of the rainbow if they get what they want?
It's not Big 12. I can tell you that, because Big 12 is not really a much better situation. I'm not sure they're picky over one or the other. It's funny. I think the fan base a little still would prefer Big Ten, because I think they're kind of over ESPN and how the playoff stuff was all treated and kind of feel disrespected. But the truth of the matter is, if the Big Ten didn't want them, which I think the Big Ten would, the Big Ten wants to get into Florida, and Florida State is the most prominent brand that could get you into Florida if you're the Big Ten. But I think the Florida State would take either. I think they're not going to be picky if it was SEC or Big Ten. There are advantages to the SEC with proximity and things like that. I mean, you travel on a lot farther to some of those Big Ten schools, and that would hurt especially for the non-rev sports. But I do not think Florida State would be picky if they managed to get out. I think either of the big two would be perfectly fine with them.
Kurt Weiler, you can check him out on the Osceola. That's the Rivals website covering FSU. Does a great job. Kurt, appreciate you making some time for us today here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Always a pleasure. Appreciate having me.
We appreciate Kurt making the time. You know, that's the thing when you're talking about FSU and their future. It's one thing to say, hey, we won out of the ACC. We're not happy. We won out. I get that they're not happy. I never quite get the conclusive answer as to what they want, though. They want more money. We know that. But there hasn't been any evidence the SEC is looking at FSU. Maybe if we have a grand realignment in college football, maybe at some point the SEC is a 20-team version or something and needs FSU. But there hasn't been any indication the FSU desire is reciprocated by the SEC. And so far, again, there's teams in the Big Ten have been real clear about this, that didn't like the idea of adding Oregon and Washington, only did it because Fox was willing to pay for them. But places like Iowa are saying, hey, man, life's hard enough for us. We don't need anybody else. We wish we didn't have as many as we do. I just, again, if it's turned into the NFC and the AFC and you got to go to 20 teams, 24 teams, sure, somebody's going to take FSU. But unless we get to that point, and I don't know that we're there yet, man, I'm not sure they've got this landing spot that they're so confident in Tallahassee that they have if they could just win this legal case. We shall see. It is a Chuck Oliver Show. We will continue right after this.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
There's going to be a break off of about 50 to 60 teams, and they're going to be professional football. And then everybody else is going to be what you're saying. Is this, call it G5, call it college football, call it whatever you want. We're going to be competing on hopefully a more level playing field. That's coming way faster than anybody can anticipate. And there's people active, there's venture capitalists right now actively looking to buy college franchise.
Chuck Oliver's Show rolling on. That is the voice of UAB head coach Trent Dofer talking to WJOX Radio over in Birmingham last week on Friday. That's certainly an interesting thing to put out there. He is somebody who played in San Francisco, says he's got some connections in that area. And look, the idea of venture capital money coming into college football has been floated as, among other things, we were just talking FSU, it's been floated as one of the ways that maybe FSU, if they can't get out of the ACC, might try to find a way to get that revenue up to where they think they need to be, would be, in effect, sell a share of the program to somebody, whether that be venture capitalists or some individual that would be able to buy a share. I don't know, but there had been talk that even possibly the Saudis might get involved. Obviously, the public investment fund has been very active in the golf world, but that's not the only place in sports that they've expressed interest. So could you see a scenario where something like that, the Saudi public investment fund says we'll provide a revenue stream for this university, whatever it might be, FSU or someone else, in return for this investment of revenue now, we get whatever percentage of all of it, of merchandise sales, of ticket sales, of playoff revenue, of TV revenue, of all of it. You know, we'll give you the money up front, but then we are buying something. Can you possibly do that unless you have made the student athletes official employees? That seems hard to believe, that you could sell a piece of, in effect, what Trent Dofer said there, a franchise. It seems hard to believe you could sell that to anybody without having made them employees first and having a plan for how they're going to get paid on it. But we've seen people be pretty audacious before, so maybe somebody be willing to try it that way. I don't know, but Dofer is unusual, obviously, in that he is a coach, but he is a coach with an extensive media background before he became a coach. And so he is a little more willing to say things publicly than almost any other coach in the sport. I don't know that you'll find anybody else who will publicly say what Dofer was saying, not just about what he thinks might happen, but he was saying he thinks this stuff might happen in as soon as 18 months. Now, that doesn't mean he's right just because he's saying it, but it is an interesting thing for a sitting FBS head coach to be putting out there into the world. So, again, it's interesting times, and that kind of investment is not hard to imagine. That kind of investment in 18 months would take a radical restructuring I don't know we're ready for yet.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right, which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.